pale horse. The man who sat on him was death. And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Declarations of War. We're back, baby. I am your host, Alexa Carr, joined by my co-host, Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
And Levitine.
Hello, everyone.
Alec, we discussed this.
Levitine?
Yes.
like I said, guys, you got the first bit right. Everything else is just a bonus.
Lave, team?
Yeah.
Levitine.
Yeah, Artemis says it.
Tane. Levitine.
Levitine. Okay. So my friend for many years, you'd think I know how to pronounce his name, but honestly, it's never come up. A couple of shout-outs before we get into things. I want to give a very special shout-out to Night Jester. He's finally taking a very well-deserved vacation.
My shout-out goes to Alec for setting up what is going to be a very awesome Providence deployment for the network.
Whoop, whoop.
Join the network. And my shout-out today goes out to a group of us from who are X and Y and MC refugees have settled into Shadow Cartel. We've been made really well at home with our new bros. I'm going to give a good shout-out to them.
Shadow Cartel Network Coalition? I'm not saying it's not happening.
Oh, boy.
And, of course, a special shout-out to our sponsor, The Eve Onion. The place for your EVE Online news. They have a very exclusive story about an acquisition from CCP, or excuse me, by Linden Labs to CCP. So Pearl Abyss has sold CCP to developer Linden Labs. Apparently, the public given reason is us. They were, quote, embarrassed with our juvenile antics and constant attempts to harass and belittle the player base.
Wow.
Yeah. So, we are now owned by the developers of Second Life. That's awesome. You can find out more at eveonion.com. That's eveonion.com. We break the news of EVE Online. Speaking of news, we've got a lot to talk about. We had a little bit of a poll, and this is from an episode that I don't think Lave was able to sit in on, so I'm curious to see his reaction. Do you think energy neutralizers are more useful defensively or offensively? 75% of the audience agrees offensively. Lave, you have done both small gang and large gang warfare. What do you think?
I honestly think there's an argument for both here. Newts take a lot of cap to kind of... I actually think I was in that episode myself. I think it was myself and you talking about it, but I could be mistaken.
I was going to say, I don't remember being on this episode.
Oh, that might have been the one that you missed, Art. Well, what do you think?
I would generally... Well, let's get Lave's opinion.
As I say, I think from a ship point of view, it kind of varies. I'd probably lean more towards offense. Defense, if you have to be using that, then things are already looking a bit hairy.
I would agree. I think they're more powerful offensively. Mostly because, like, if you're... In terms of you're flying a ship and you have a newt, if you're flying a typical small gang ship and you have a newt, like I'm thinking like a solo PvP nightmare, your newt is almost exclusively there for defense, right? A single heavy newt isn't going to do anything. But in the grand scheme of the EVE ship PvP meta, newts are used offensively more often than they are used defensively because they're more powerful that way.
Yeah, I'd agree.
I would actually throw it into the defensive category. And I totally agree with your assessment, Artemis. The way I was thinking about this question was more useful, as in what was the biggest impact of using the module. And with the, you know, kind of the unpopularity of active tanks these days, especially in larger scale conflicts, if you are bringing newts to the table, a lot of the popular weapon system these days, like missiles and stuff, they're not using cap. It's not like the old laser days of old. So I actually think you get more impact from a defensive newt than you would from an offensive newt. So I went in that direction personally.
That's true right up until you talk about caps. Caps and supers, and that flips on its head.
Yeah.
And you see from a low site point of view, the main battleship gangs you see now are the Shaxs and Balgons. Both ships have incredible neutralizing capability and or fitting ability. Because you expect someone to drop caps, and if you're going against a fleet of Balgons and the Shaxs, it's very scary to drop dreadnoughts in neutralizer range of them because they will quickly find themselves cap dry.
Great points. All right, you sold me.
All right.
Especially with how prevalent cap ships are these days. And yeah, I guess even if you're passive tanking the dreads, it's still a problem to get neutered out.
Yeah, you lose your guns. Well, unless you're a Swagglefire or a Phoenix, you lose your guns. And if you're using emergency the emergency damage controls, they take a huge amount of cap. So if you cap people out, they can't use that either.
Mm.
There is one strat which has recently come out, which is that Pith C-type invulns, and in fact any dead space invuln, has the same cycle time as a cap booster. So you can take a capital cap booster, load it up with, I think it's 100 and something? Let me check. 113 Navy cap booster 150s, or even more if you drop it down to Navy 75s, or Navy 100s rather. And if you activate the cap booster at the same time as your hardeners, in the same tick, you can never be neutered out. So you have 113 times 10 seconds, which is 1,130 seconds of invulns being on and unable to be turned off.
Hmm.
The only usage I've ever seen for this work actually used in combat on TQ was Marathia, who is a Spectre Fleet fan, had his super get tackled, and it eventually got killed, but it was only dropped by a handful of supers and dreads, and so it sat there and tanked like 8 million DPS or 8 million damage, and when he heated his hardeners, when he reached around 30 to 40% shields, he actually was tanking the supers until he ran out of heat. His passive regen on a super was tanking the other super shooting him.
That's crazy.
Wow.
I would love to see that bit. That's god level. I remember the days of when passive shield tanking used to be a really popular thing. Like, the passive shield Drake was terrifying to fight. You never wanted to run into something like that. The passive Nighthawk.
You occasionally ran into in the days of Fozzysov when you'd have those haulers doing Entosis with huge passive tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And if you drop on them, unless you don't have critical numbers, you just kind of shoot this hauler and just watch its shields just fly up and down everywhere. It's ridiculous.
I remember trying to design ships that could passively tank entire fleets. And you're like, well, we could have a whole fleet of these things and we don't need any logis. And yeah. But fitting changes, logistic ship buffs, all that stuff came in, kind of changed the meta. It's kind of a shame. I really wish in some ways that it was back, but maybe with a little more counterplay.
You know, newts turn off active hardeners.
Well, that wouldn't be a passive fit then.
Just saying. It would be a passive recharge tank.
Yeah, I know what you mean. All right, I thought it'd be cool to catch you guys up on some of the stuff that happened on vacation. There's some stuff that happened while we were gone. Yeah, as far as what our vacation plans are, I was bouncing all over the East Coast, saw the fam, watched a ton of anime, watched The Good Place, which is an awesome comedy. I had never seen it, only a couple clips. I loved it. I binged basically two seasons over the vacation break. Lave, what did you do?
I mean, this was obviously a major kind of family side of things. Nice to have some time out from work, because again, they use a game and kind of like the third most important thing after kind of real life and job and family and everything else. When I came, I think it's been nice to kind of have to, having recently switched over from MC to Shadow, and not having any kind of major responsibilities at this time that I kind of have to worry about. It's been nice to really turn off from things. But New Year, and we're back.
Artemis, what did you do over the holidays?
I was working 60 hours a week and launching a new podcast.
Would you like to shill for that podcast now?
I mean, I guess I can. It's I guess it's technically an extension of an existing podcast, but Talking in Stations now is a show 2 times a week. The Sunday show remains the same as it always was, and now we have a show on Thursdays, USTZ, but it's technically Fridays on Eve Time, so we just call it the Midweek Show.
And it's you and who else, and where can people watch it and all that stuff?
Boy, you are really into the shilling thing, aren't you?
I'm experienced, Artemis.
Twitch.tv/talkinginstations is where it can be found live. Of course, you can see the podcast in audio form wherever you get your podcasts. We also have talkinginstations.com, where you can see the collection of all of the Talking in Stations content, podcasts, articles, videos, recordings, etc. We have a new YouTube channel. If you search for Talking in Stations, you probably won't find it because we are absolutely garbage at search engine optimization, but we're getting there. Joining me on the Talking in Stations Midweek Update, we have Ron USMC from Test Alliance Please Ignore, super old-time member. He's like the happy, jolly uncle, sort of the adult in the room. And then we've got Silver Suspiria, who is the XO for Federation Uprising, who recently announced on last episode that FedUp is leaving Pureblind and joining Legacy Coalition.
Ooh. That's a pretty nice pickup.
Indeed.
That delivery was smooth. That was a slick delivery.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Speaking of the Imperium, they've had a pretty active holiday. They have finished evicting Hard Knox. It was not the epic showdown we were hoping it would be on the last show. They didn't even really bother defending. Hard Knox was captured on video, just undocking, self-destructing all their stuff. Which is a shame. I can see why they would not want to fight it, but still, like, to give up your keep star with no resistance, that's kind of meh.
I don't think they really had a chance, though. I mean, obviously when they first got it, loads of wormhole groups were coming in, and that's a feat in itself, because most wormhole groups hate each other. Getting onto the same room and the same fleet together is pretty much as good an accomplishment as actually dropping the Keepstar. But there was an engagement before the second timer, where effectively they brought an Imperium fleet and dropped it 30 kilometers away from one of the Initiative Goku fleets, or the Stuka fleets. That's the afterburning bomber fleets, which went very poorly for the Munins. Most of them got potted out, and then it's just basically the Initiative at that time had called in Snuff, had called in Goons, had called in Test. So the second and final timers, Hard Knox had no hull control, and were basically facing over 1,000 players.
Ooh.
Yeah, it just shows that keep stars don't really do anything for you in wormholes. I mean, they are trophies, but they offer, apart from the super weapon they have, which is pretty much the biggest killer on Hard Knox side, not really much else. And in actual fact, I probably hurt them against the Raven fleet booshing around because of the radius of the Keepstar. So if you're the Ravens, they will try and boost around about 250 to 300 kilometers away, but the Keepstar itself is massive, so you can't just stick dreadnoughts in the center of the Keepstar model. They simply won't reach, and you'd probably need a good 20 or 30 of them to get good accurate coverage around the Keepstar. So it actually is a disadvantage to defend a target that big. Otherwise,
I concur wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I keep hearing about the jumpy Ravens. Is there a reason people are not just micro jumping the same direction that the Ravens are jumping and keep shooting them?
So the Raven fleet has counters. The best counter we saw was basically to take rocks in much the same thing, because the rocks are the Kaldari battleship that uses railguns. They can easily match the range of the Ravens, and the Ravens, they are armor tanked, so they have roughly about 65, maybe 70k affected hit points. So it doesn't take long to alpha them. They're remote rep, so they don't have dedicated logi inside, and a dedicated fleet, you know, booshing after. If you had a rock fleet booshing after the Ravens would bleed horribly. The problem is the Initiative are very good. They've been doing this far longer than everyone else. Most of the people can't legitimately get their shit together to do this. And in situations like this, they often, that's why initiative backfound in everyone else. So it wasn't just the Ravens. There was a Jackdaw. There was an entire Jackdaw fleet. There was a Stuka fleet. There were Tengus. There were other things as well. So you knock down the Ravens, in come the Jackdaws. You knock down the Jackdaws, in come the Stuka, so on and so forth. They are beatable by all chance, but you're facing possibly the best people who are out there using them, certainly these with more practice, and they had counters to your counters, if you will. But then if you have over 1,000 players, you can do this.
True, true. The benefits of scaling effects. There's more Imperium news. Tri move up, ambushed by Imperium. Oh man, Tri is not having a good year. Or at least the past couple months. It has been rough. Artemis, do you want to talk about this one?
I mean, yeah, it was unfortunately a pretty, like, oof, nasty operation. So Tri was moving, and if I recall correctly, it was Snuff who found them moving and sort of set the whole thing up. And then, if I recall correctly, the story that I was told was Snuff batphoned the main core of the Imperium first, and something happened with Sinos such that they didn't get there. Like, they went to the wrong system, or they had some fatigue or something, and so eventually Legacy came in with the final hammer that got the majority of the kills. That's the story that I have heard. But then Butcher's Bill is just... whew, way too many Ragnaroks, way too many Hells. Basically, just about everything that was trying to move died because there wasn't enough of a support fleet for them to do anything about killing off Dictors, getting their stuff away. If stuff was tackled, it was dead. And now the rumor around Pureblind is that Triumvirate has been trying to take space in Pureblind, basically restart. But they lost a Fortizar up in the Losec area around there and haven't been able to keep anything anchored to have a proper staging, at least out of a Citadel. They could do it out of an NPC station, but it's going to be tough. As far as the reasoning why Tri got to this point, it has been said that their main leaders in FC, particularly Garst, were deployed with the military, and so were AFK. And with your leadership AFK, your FC's AFK, members also get AFK, activity drops down. Of course, did he say jump left Black Legion? Ignore me. But people start to leave. We saw that 4 major corps took out like a third of Tri's membership base, and that's when they started losing solve to skill yourself. But now reportedly Garst is back, other FCs and leadership are starting to return, so maybe Tri could rise from the ashes again. We've seen it happen. Ironically, last year at the beginning of the year, we saw it happen. But who knows?
Well, Tri is one of those perennial alliances. We're now on, what, Tri version 6? So they're kind of a phoenix rising from the ashes type situation. Sure, we haven't heard the last of them. Operation Snowblind breaks the game. Luckily, I wasn't around for tons of this, although I have heard there's still warp-in issues.
Yeah. I'm unfamiliar with this. What happened?
You'll often find that if you're sitting on a gate, ships won't just glide in. They will just magically appear next to you as if they've walked backwards. And there just appears to be chat problems and various other glitches. CCP have released the patch notes for the January update, and hopefully the majority of these bugs will get squashed. But it's been an interesting time when you... basically just sitting on a gate and watching your fleet kind of coming backwards and teleport from the wrong direction from where they're supposed to be coming from. Doesn't look very good.
Oh, I ran into that bug today when we were moving caps, and I was sitting there, I warped first, and then as I'm landing on the gate, I see a Moros that I warped ahead of already on the gate. And so I sat there and I asked on comms, like, dude, is your Moros hyperspatial fit? Like, what? Apparently this was that bug. Today I learned. Also, regarding the chat system thing, so CCP has released a statement saying that although for future proofing, it is necessary for the chat system to change. They recognize that it's like almost been a year now and the chat system is still hot garbage. And it's really like breaking the game. Like the game does not work as it should when the chat system is as broken as it is. So they release a statement saying that they hope that the fixes can come out with the January update. If they don't, if it doesn't resolve the issues or at least make the game playable, then they will reinstate the old chat system until they can figure out what's up. So either the problem with new chat system is getting solved or we're getting old chat back.
Yeah, I honestly don't care either way. I'm not even sure what the new chat system was supposed to accomplish.
It was supposed to remove load from the server and in the future enable like continuous chat even through downtime and things like that.
Well, reducing server load is good. I don't really care about that other thing. Unless it would enable some kind of outside of Eve chat client. Well, hopefully they get it resolved. So Lave, as you mentioned, is now a member of Shadow Cartel, and he would like to talk about the view of LoSEC, which we don't talk about tons, or at least haven't recently on the show, but we used to be talking about it all the time. So it's really great that we have a host that's LoSEC-based once again. And Lave, walk us through the landscape of LoSEC right now as Shadow Cartel looks out from the top of the mountain. Arguably, they and Snuff are the king titans of LoSEC. What do you guys see? What's the landscape?
It's very kind of you to put us as the King Titans of LoSEC. I personally see LoSEC as a bit more fractious about that. Of course, you have Snuff, but no one can quite hold a candle to their Titan capability and their bat phone. It just no one else can compete with that. Shadow's certainly a lot smaller, whereas Snuff has gained a lot more aligned corporations recently. From our point of view, I mean, we obviously are based in around the Amaki Sisade area. This area, really close to my heart. I started PvPing in this area. It was great to come back home. And generally speaking, obviously, most groups have their own blues. The blue lists are fairly short. They can vary from time to time. One of the nice things about LoSEC is you don't quite take yourself as seriously as in the NullSec side of things. You know, Null is all about the politics. It's very much kind of a strategy here and everywhere else, and just general numbers, whatnot. LoSEC, it's easier to kind of pick up and go, have the smaller fights, though that is difficult these days because faction warfare is effectively a dead horse. That's not always the case, and I'm speaking mainly of what we see over down in our neck of the woods. I know Snuff and whatnot all went up north to the Black Rise area, which I was very fond of, because Mercenary Academy ran its classes from there. So we took all the new bros out in that area, got a great lot of fun, but that area has just been sterilized. So here we are down away from them. I think certainly from what we've seen, we had a really nice cat brawl today, which legitimately I got to actually drop a dread for the first time in my gaming, in my EVE career. This is a big thing. I've never actually dropped a dread before. And
how is that possible?
That's ridiculous. I've had a Titan and I've never dropped a dread before. So it was very nice. Nice to get some kill mails on it. Kind of was nice. Bads dropped dreads, we dropped dreads, their dreads died, ours lived. That was nice. And good to kind of be able to get into those kind of fights and from small to slightly larger engagements. I wouldn't say I know too much about the landscape outside where we are, only because the Christmas period was so busy from a work family point of view that I simply haven't had my head in the game that much anyway. But certainly there's lots of more smaller groups, various movement of groups around. So Diddy Hey, Say Jump, Left Bat Legion, they're now, we see them quite regularly on a regular basis in our area. There are, you know, almost like kind of good-natured skirmishes, if you will, at times with groups like Two Ends and One Chalice. Unity, Ushra Khan are in the area as well. We had some nice fights as well with Black Legion when they were there.
And what happened to Siege Green? They used to be a big guild, didn't they?
If I recall, yeah, I, To be fair, I don't quite know the answer to that, because I'm not sure if they packed up and went elsewhere. I honestly don't. I'm sure someone else will probably know the answer to that. I apologize for my lack of information on this point. But yeah, it's certainly enjoying it from the low-sec point of view. It's certainly a different landscape to it, and fairly central to the map, so we can go in all different directions.
And what's your relationship with Snuff? Is there sort of the other low-sec heavyweight?
I think it's fair to say that they are not friends. I'm not in any kind of leadership position from that, but you know, they are the third party kind of boogeyman, if you were to look out for, you know, when they go around starting reinforcing Pocos with solitary caps, you know, these guys will literally just reinforce Pocos or Pauses with what appear to be unsupported Nixes and whatnot. And some groups might look at that and go, you mean Nixes, not realizing the absolute hammer that's on the other side of it. So no, we don't particularly like them. They killed Itzmiex Ragnarok a couple of months ago, baited on a passive armor Aeon, and in they came. I think I'd lost an Apostle in there as well. And so yeah, they're the perennial kind of third party threat for any kind of major engagement.
Interesting. Well, we have had pretty major engagements in low-sec recently, specifically Test. Just took an absolutely massive whelping of caps in low-sec. Artemis, you're aware of not only what happened in this fight, but some of the metagame and strategic level decisions that went into what drove it. Start us off at the beginning. Set the stage for this fight.
Well, you see, when a mommy and a daddy love each other very much...
they go on to Reddit, shitpost a lot, and Test is born.
But, no. So, if you recall, way, 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 way back when, it seems like at least, Test decided they were going to take over Perimeter from Horde. And at the time, Horde basically had a deal with I Choose You where... I Choose You sort of managed the market, and then Horde was sort of dealing with any other markets that would pop up, maintaining a monopoly in the area, and then also were a defense fleet of people who would come and attack. And Tess saw this and they thought, I can take that. I'm going to take that. Let's take it, guys. And so Tess went in, bulldozed all of the I Choose You structures, made a big deal out of it, it hit the news, and then they've been trying to maintain it ever since. And as I said, the whole time they were taking it over, the biggest part, if you're trying to do this sort of high-sec market PvP, is the maintenance, right? You've got to kill off every single other market that goes up because they can undercut your taxes and will take all of your market share. And that's what Horde and I Choose You have been doing. They've been launching sometimes multiple Asbels with market modules at a time and essentially undercutting the tax rate of Test's Keepstar. And as a result, the Plex market, the Injector market, all of it shifts over. I Choose You makes more Plex or makes enough money to place some more Asbels down, rinse and repeat. This also has to do with the new War Deck system, where they can do this with some funky mechanics and basically guarantee that their Asbel will make it online within the first 24 hours and actually get the market up and running. But that's a story for another time, I suppose. In any case, this is happening, and at the same time, Test has deals with various entities. Of course, they're not going to be invading the North, presumably because it creates some wonky political situations with the deal that the Imperium has with the North. There's reportedly a deal between Legacy Coalition and Fraternity, so they can't invade them at the moment as well, as a result of the end of the big war that we had. So Test sort of, they're looking for content. And Horde is up in Geminate, having a good old time with a bunch of content. At the time, Goonswarm SIGs were up there. For a time, Horde was invading Branch and shooting at GOTG, so there were a bunch of fights happening there. NC and PL sort of kind of deployed over there. Black Legion was there. So Horde looks like a fantastic, juicy target for content. And Horde is being a massive pain in the butt for the machinations of Test Alliance and their perimeter market monopoly. So Test announces a deployment. Initially, they're just jump cloning up there, so they set up a station, or a Fort Azar, a couple of them actually, including a faction fort in Orgenon, which is the low-sec system adjacent to BWF, the entrance to Geminate. which is generally where a lot of fights happen. And if I recall correctly, it was over one of these Fortizars that was getting reinforced that this particular fight happened. And essentially, after they'd been getting a bunch of content, after Tess was getting a bunch of content and Horde was continuing to put Asbells down in perimeter, it was announced to Tess that they were going to be doing what's called a death clone deployment. They're making a big deal out of it. A bunch of people don't understand why, but essentially they can run multiple fleets a day. They set their death clones in Oigenin as opposed to setting their death clones back home in Catch or Esoteria or wherever their crabbing space is. So now they're up there. They moved like 500 dreads at once, if I recall correctly. So they've got a bunch of dreads, but no supers. And that was important in this fight because NC and PL did have supers. So in this particular fight, things escalated. If I recall correctly, it was over a Fortizar timer. Tess drops a bunch of their dreadnoughts, and NCPL drops their supers on top of them and wipes the floor.
Oof. And what was the total butcher's bill?
I need to pull up the BR and find out the exact number because I don't want to misquote it.
I think the total was about 300 billion, of which 230-ish was Test. So I'm thinking of that one correctly. Blave, were you guys involved in that one at all? Or just kind of watching on with envy?
Watching with envy, in fairness.
Yeah, it's, those fights are always kind of mixed bags for me because I love the story behind them, and it's so cool to see huge fights like that, but I also know the reality of being in such fights, which is a lot of tie-dye, usually. I haven't read a detailed battle report from this as to like how bad the system was or whether it was able to handle it. But, man, if Eve played like Eve normally played at fights of that scale, there's nothing like it.
Mentioning the story, I sort of left out one bit which is particularly interesting, and that's that was it Vili or Progod? One of them made an announcement to Test, and they basically said, "Hey, listen, guys, we're full hardcore deploying up to Geminate to put pressure on Horde, and we're going to keep doing this until either Horde is gone from Geminate or Horde stops putting stuff in our perimeter market." So they're basically pegging, "Listen, we're deploying here because Horde is messing with our perimeter market." Now, certainly it is the case that there is content in Geminate, right? And Test needs content in order to keep their members happy, and they can't find that content elsewhere at the moment. So in the future, when the agreements go away between the Imperium and the North, when the agreements go away between Test and Fraternity, they may get bored with Horde and move somewhere else. So we'll have to see if they can actually stick her out and force Horde to stop, or if Horde thinks, I can weather this storm, enjoy having a bunch of good fights with Test, enjoy letting NC and PL drop supers on them without any risk of hostile supers being dropped as a counter, and wait a few months, and then they'll go away.
It's definitely a story we're going to keep our eyes on and let you know how it develops. Certainly, once the agreements drop from the big wars that we had recently, a lot of new fights are kind of on the table. Some of which look pretty interesting, like Legacy Frat, perhaps a new Imperium offensive in the north, perhaps a northern counteroffensive in the south.
I mean, just to kind of wrap on that particular point, it touches on what Artemis was saying there about the bad Horde basically taking the fight to Test in high sec. So back when Test were reinforcing the structures, they were putting down 250-man mega front fleets, and you just can't really fight that in high sec. But it's important to note here, because not only is it you're getting market share, and obviously the amount of money that flows through these particular structures is pretty impressive, but they're at, as was previously mentioned, they're one of the last, if not the last, remaining form of passive income in the game. You know, moons, these R64 moons, now require effort to go and get the stuff out of. Whereas these things, you drop them, and assuming they're left alone, they will just keep ticking over. So don't underestimate the amount of money these things bring in.
Yeah, it's a huge motivating factor, that passive income, because NullSec Alliances, you got to get that SRP money somehow, you know? And if you don't want your tax rate on your members to be too high, which no one does, you need to find a way to get it elsewhere. And if it's not coming out of the ground through magic moon goo, well, taxing high-sec puppies makes a lot of sense. Alright, now we talked about Tri being evicted by Scourge at the top of the news block. Let's talk about what Scourge is doing down where Tri was evicted from. We've had a lot of fighting spark up in Salt and Scalding Pass, especially in the past 2 to 3 weeks. Generally speaking, Scourge had been engaging Tri in what I would call a, for the most part, uncontested grind of their sob space prior to this point. Now that Tri is out and Scourge is in, Scourge is looking to now expand their influence even farther by installing their own renting alliances, or at least supporting alliances that want to evict the old renting alliances or the old smaller alliances that Tri just kind of left around. So, there's basically a total reshuffle of Scalding Pass on the board. You've got Fraternity fighting Bright Side of Death. You've got Scourge fighting some of the smaller alliances in, I guess it's Northern or Northwestern Scalding Pass. And various other smaller alliances coming in, you would presume with Scourge's blessing, but possibly not, trying to stake their own claim into that space. Because kind of everything seems like it's on the table now that things are shaken up. And, well, we can say from the op we were just on earlier today that Scourge is putting up some significant numbers. They've definitely grown, they're confident, and they are looking to make a mark. Meanwhile, Fraternity, they don't have to worry about invasion from Legacy, so they are throwing their weight around as well. It's going to be interesting. Obviously, this is right next door to Great Wildlands, so we kind of have a front row seat to everything that's going on. As we get involved in some of the fighting, which I'm sure we will, we're going to bring you more details on the show. But it's a shifting political miasma down there, and I can tell you there's just lots of small, medium, and not really that large fleets rolling around in the grand scheme of NullSec. We're talking less than 100 for the most part. Obviously, some of the Fraternity fleets are going to get bigger than that. But otherwise, yeah, it's just an interesting pressure cooker of a region right now, and it's kind of cool to be looking in on that.
I was going to say, regarding the Fraternity versus Bright Side of Death fight, we talked about it, I think, the last time they fought, and it was a big brawl, was over the Bright Side of Death staging Fortizar and Curse, which Fraternity did end up killing. And recently, Fraternity also killed a faction Fortizar that belonged to Bright Side of Death in Scalding Pass. And there was a bit of a brawl with Bright Side of Death, as well as some of those smaller alliances up in the northwest of Scalding Pass. They brought in Shield Max, Fraternity brought in Shield Max plus carriers, and Fraternity ended up winning out the fight and killing that faction Fortizar. Interestingly, like, not that much Sov has been reoed. Like, I've been expecting to see just a wave of everything, all the Sov that belongs to Bright Side of Death get reoed by Fraternity, but they haven't been doing it, and I don't know why. Because you've got a bunch of the Right Order Sov, which has been reinforced. And that we talked about because they were taking it away from Brute Force Solutions. And who was the other group that lived there?
And what
the Order?
Brute Force was the big one. And then there was another smaller alliance they had sort of in their area.
In any case, that Sov is... Oh no, it's under an incursion. Colors matter. Okay, never mind. But yeah, Bright Side of Death Sov mostly untouched. It's just fights over structures at the moment.
Well, they had some Sov pressure put on them when we first covered this story, but that seems to have died down. I do want to clarify that on one of the previous shows we recorded that there was a substantial rumor that Bright Side had negotiated some kind of surrender or ceasefire with Fraternity. That seems to have been fairly conclusively proven to be just rumor. Or if it wasn't a rumor, things clearly didn't work out because the fighting is ongoing. They're resisting stiffly. Very interesting stuff. All right, moving on to some host highlights. I had mine this very morning. It's one of the sickest or just funniest things that I've ever seen or done. I was moving an Ocketer around in low. Now, I did have a scout. Come on, you guys know me better than that. I did have a scout. But as I was landing on a gate that had been reported clear, a saber from an adjacent gate that was very close had jumped in and warped to where I was landing. We just happened to land at about the same time. I was like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. So of course he bubbles me. I'm like, okay, what can I do here? I'm trying to think through my options. And my thought process is, if I burn out of the bubble, maybe he'll aggress me, but his DPS probably isn't that great, so maybe I could slow boat back to the gate and jump. Because obviously he's going to get me on both sides anyway. So the goal was to move out of range, have him aggress me, and then try to tank him, and hopefully he didn't have any backup, while I slow boat back to the gate, jump through, and moonwalk back to my destination. Well, it sort of worked out. I began to edge my way away from the bubble, activated the micro warp drive, started burning out. Like a good saber pilot, he went after me and started bubbling ahead of me. Like a bad saber pilot, he didn't notice that at about 10 kilometers, I changed directions and burned back to the gate as fast as possible. And he kept going for about another 5 or 10 before he realized what was happening and then tried hard as he could to get back to the gate. However, I was able to jump through, warp away, and get to the next system before he caught up with me. And from there, it was safe and sound. So someone please buy Drew McKnight a new set of ankles. You can donate some ISK to him.
Feels bad, man.
It's happened to us all.
Art?
Yeah, my host highlight has been fiddling around with Pypha, like since I found out about the trick with the cycle time with the cap boosters and everything. And also there's so capital core, or just generally core defense capacitor safeguards, are rigs which reduce the capacitor need for shield boosters. And so I've been playing with Fitz, seeing, you know, how far can we push one cap booster, right? One Navy cap booster, 3200, how much can it activate? And you can make a Oracle fit with hardeners that can't be turned off by newts, and with two Concord shield boosters that can be activated at the same time with the single button press of one Navy Cap Booster 3200. So you're talking a Rorqual with a peak tank of just under 80,000 DPS, and a tank that cannot be newted out of 55k DPS, and that is with no heat.
That's ridiculous. That's like six dreads.
Uh-huh. And not to mention, you know, you're a Oracle, so you have 1500 drone DPS while you're at it.
Sure, why not? Now, for comparison, Artemis, how much drone DPS does a carrier provide?
Let me look up the typical ratting Nidhogger fit, and I'll get to that.
I think it's about 2k DPS on the normal guns. They can pulse to about 3k DPS with the missile volleys as well.
So it's like half a carrier, but with more tank than several carriers combined.
More tank than a fax.
At least they took off the multiple ancillary boosters. That was horror.
Well, the ironic thing is, like, this fit is tankier than the multi-ancil fit. It's just nobody bothered to look into it because multi-ancils was a thing.
It's so like, when are we running fleets of this? When are we running fleets of this?
Well, I mean, we are deploying to Pravi, so like...
Gonna be Frank the Bank, but with Oracles?
Something like that.
Sweet. I look forward to the YouTube video. Lave?
I was going to talk about one highlight, but we had a kind of another kind of little one. I mean, like I'm sure you've know by like Artemis, I love fitting up ships, and one of the ships that I really like is the Deacon. It is the Amar Logistics Frigate. It is an utter beast, and these things are really tanky with dead space reps, which you should absolutely be putting on Deacons. These become monsters. Now, we tend to run ours a little bit differently because the standard Deacon fit is either a 5NM fit, which allows it to go about 2.3k a second, and was pretty common with the micro warp drive beam retry gangs that was a flavor of month about 6 to 12 months ago. Or you can run them 1NM and they do about 800, 850 meters a second, depending on the plate size and your skills. And you generally see these run with armor gangs, or, as we're seeing increasingly in low sec, the Kiki Mora. Now, the Kiki is the new Triglavian destroyer, and it is broken as hell in terms of its damage. Its damage output is silly, and its tracking, it's GPS-like. So you can't out-track it. You can obviously put EWAR on it itself. And these monsters can have easily over 10k affected hit points with over 70% resistances without trying too much. But where I'm going with the Deacon is that we tend to run the 10nm oversize afterburner fit on the Deacon. This gives you two advantages. One, your signature remains about 32 to 35 meters, so you're just about the size of a small drone. But you're going about 2k a second. So the Kiki Mora becomes possibly the only ship that can hit it. This thing will shrug off over half the DPS from light missiles. Is next to impossible to hit by anything bigger unless you get webs and hard web and paint this thing. And the times that we've lost these kind of things have usually been to other frigate gangs that don't rely on it, because, of course, when you put the 10nm on it, you have to sacrifice a lot of power grid. So the balancing point of this is to get a Deacon that has good effective hit points. For example, a standard 1nm fit with a 400mm plate, you could easily be rocking between 16 and up to 20k effective. The 10nm fit with a 200mm plate, you're probably rocking about 10 to 12k effective. Now, abyssal mods are a thing, so you can roll faction plates, you can roll other plates to get a bit more armor at them. You can roll the afterburner to try and get reduced power grid. And what we can get is a Deacon that has about 12k effective, that is fully stable on its fitting, that has full dead space reps, that goes over 2k a second, that cannot be scrammed. And it's essentially a menace, because nothing can hit these things. And I've started to take about dual boxing logic these days. So I think I've finally given up dual or even triple boxing different role ships. I'm just going to focus on one. So two Deacons, two Guardians, two DPS, that kind of thing. I would hope to put this all to the test recently, because a ping went out and it says Retribution's Deacon's getting fleet. So we all get into fleet. And Paquito, one of our FCs, has taken an advanced force into through a wormhole into Nullsec. And he's engaging some guys who had dropped a carrier. And he's got four Retributions there and four Deacons. And we're all sat, you know, across the universe on a wormhole as the kind of the reinforcement force. The guys who he's shooting, I can't remember who they are, proceed to feed to him various ships in all shapes of colours, including a Loki, Lachesis, various other ships. They just keep wandering into these four Deacons and four Retributions and dying horribly. So we got to sit on a wormhole for about half an hour, listening as Paquito and eight frigates shredded about over 3 billion worth of ships, and then we all turned around and went home.
Rip.
Whew.
So we now, never got to try.
Everyone knows the Triglavian ships are remarkably flexible with the high slots. What are you doing with the Kiki Mora highs?
The Kiki Mora only has one utility high compared to the Damovik, which is the frigate. So you could put a neutralizer in there. You could generally put a lot of things in there itself. Now, the armor Kiki Moras can be cap injected, in which case you've got less problems in using a neutralizer. Smart bombs, potentially, but in low sec, you're very quickly going to get the attention of gate guns, but then that's not usually an issue. I personally would be putting in a neutralizer. The remote rep is okay, but it has absolutely nothing on a Deacon. The Deacon's repping ability, when you put in dead space reps, and this is without gang links, is still a sight to behold.
I actually recently linked, because when the Kiki Mora was first just hit CC, Alec had sort of DM'd me with this 10mm remote rep Kiki Mora fit that he was adoring. And recently I saw a video posted by The Congregation, which is the old No Handlebars Corporation, but they've got a YouTube channel. And apparently they've been rolling remote rep Kiki Moras with a single Deacon. And so what they do is they rely on the deacon to keep the Kikimoras alive, and then all the Kikimoras can remote rep the deacon itself. But their gang is small, and it looks super engageable. And so they posted a fantastic video of just 4 minutes of them rolling around ganking stuff. I think they even killed a couple of caps in it, if I recall correctly. But that was super fun to watch, and an option if you have a smaller gang than I think you would typically see in Shadow Cartel fleets, but still want to try and get fights and utilize the Kikimora or try a remote rep fit.
Oh yeah, we ran into a gang a couple of days ago, and they legitimately obliterated a carrier. They had two deacons, maybe three deacons, and about five or six Kikis, and Pontifex, and maybe one or two fast tackle, and that was it. So it was less than 10 guys, and they were killing caps in low sec.
Well, you got to keep in mind, each Kikimora is putting out like 500-something DPS once it gets going.
Not quite happily, yeah.
So five of them, that's 25 DPS, that'll definitely blow through a carrier.
Yeah, and they've got decent signature and speed, so they can, against the carrier, you can mitigate a lot of the firepower from drones, because obviously the difference on fighter drones on a carrier is that their damage application uses the application mechanic of a missile. So it has an explosion radius and explosion velocity. So a small, fast-moving target will mitigate the damage coming in at it. And the Deacons and the Kikis on their afterburner, they're frigate-sized targets. They'll take virtually no damage. So a carrier will find itself in very dire straits if it's found by these things.
All right. Well, that's it, guys. Head to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show poll. We're going to have more details on our Providence campaign in the next show. So about 2 weeks from now, hopefully we'll have a lot more to talk about. Of course, we are still recruiting, especially for this Provi deployment. It's never been more convenient to get an interview fleet together. We can use a few more good pilots. Join Capitalist Chat in game for more info. That's Capitalist Space Chat. Wherever you are, good hunting, listeners.